නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we were discussing Pottapada Sutta, which is available in Digha Nikaya, the long discourses of the Buddha. And there are very interesting discussion happened between Buddha and the Pottapada and his colleagues. Basically, Buddha visited Pottapada's place, and at that time Pottapada remembered one interesting incident that he faced while he was at a particular place where different religious groups come and mention their beliefs, and they do various arguments, they do various kind of reflections about their own beliefs. And on that particular occasion, there was an argument on kind of a discussion on how gradual cessation of perceptions are happening. So some people were mentioning it is happening not due to any reason, it is completely a random kind of a process where there is no any particular reason. Without any reason, without any cause, the perceptions happen, and on such occasion the person may get become more conscious. And on the other hand, due to no reason, when the consciousness leaves, then this particular person become unconscious. And then another person mentioned it is not so, it is consciousness or this perception is very much the soul of the person, so when it is available, then that particular person become conscious, and when it is not available, then that particular person become unconscious. So basically they are believing that the perception is the soul of a particular person. Then another person mentioned it is not so, that there are some mighty powered Brahmins, so they are inserting this perception into a person's mind. When that is present, then that particular person become conscious, and when it is absent because of those mighty strong Brahmins, once they have removed, withdrawn that perception, then that particular person become unconscious. Then another group has mentioned it is not the Brahmins but some powerful devas are there, so they are the ones inserting this conscious or the perception, and when it is present, the person become conscious, and when it is not present, absent, then the person become unconscious. So these are the different arguments that different people have put forward. And at that time Pottapada mentioned that I was remembering the Buddha, because I know that Buddha should have a very beautiful answer, kind of an interesting answer, because Buddha is an expert in this area. So I was thinking about you. Now I like to ask that question from you. Now you have come to us and we are going to have a kind of a good discussion. Now please explain us how this gradual eradication or cessation of perception happened. Then Buddha immediately denied that very first argument, that is perception happened without any reason. Buddha mentioned perception happened due to reason. It's a cause and effect relationship. So basically, therefore, Buddha deny the argument mentioning that it is happening due to no reason. So on the other hand, Buddha mentioned very interesting theory here, that is certain perceptions happen due to training and certain perceptions are eliminated or ceased due to training. Now, after explaining that, Buddha get on to explain so many interesting relationships, and now I have summarized everything here because it is quite easy to understand. So Buddha mentioned very first as the morality, which has a kind of a prerequisite for the gradual elimination of certain perceptions. So one has to have good morality, and based on that morality one has to act, and therefore one can eliminate certain amount of perceptions and one can have certain beneficial perceptions. So in other sense, so this gradual eradication of perceptions we can interpret as gradual calming down of mental proliferations. So in order to calm down mental proliferations, therefore Buddha broadly mentioned threefold kind of answer. That is, one part belonging to the morality, the other part belonging to the concentration, and the other part belonging to the wisdom, sila, samadhi, panya. So there he explained the whole situation in that sense. So this is kind of a summarization. In the explanation level, he explains in detail about the morality. So he is explaining various kinds of precepts undertaken by his followers, and this morality was more explained towards renunciant, and some detailed explanation about morality was explained. So we discussed that part, and then he mentioned about the sense restraint, because if one's senses are not restrained, so various unbeneficial or harmful perceptions can come to the mind and can disturb the mind, and those perceptions can grow in the mind. So therefore Buddha mentioned that one has to maintain fair amount of sense restraint. Indresu gutta dwarata. Now that is one part. And then Buddha mentioned mindfulness and clear comprehension. Sati sampajanya. Hariyena sati sampajanyena samannagato. Where one has to maintain mindfulness throughout the day as much as possible. Because when one is mindful, one is aware of what is going on in the mind, and again one's mind has certain amount of control and one can fairly monitor one's mind. So basically it's a kind of a self-monitoring process, and whenever one is involved with various daily activities, one is trying to maintain mindfulness. And not only that, one is careful about what one is doing, whether it is useful, whether it is meaningful, whether it is beneficial, and while one is engaged with that activity, one needs to maintain mindfulness in any of those four foundations of mindfulness. And again, one is trying to develop wisdom while engaged in that activity. So likewise, fair amount of emphasis is given on mindfulness and clear comprehension. And while doing that, one has to be contented. So basically, when consider the renunciant, so they are dependent on four requisites, that is the robes, then pindapatha, the arms, and then the dwelling places and the medicine. So those four requisites are to be, once they are receiving and when they are using them, one has to be contented. Rather than asking the best ones, so one has to be contented. Actually, these all we can understand in the household life as well. One has to maintain five precepts if you are a layperson, and then one has to maintain fair amount of sense restraint. So sense restraint is necessary, because otherwise either you are a layperson or a monk, your mind is going to be distracted. So sense restraint is required. And mindfulness and clear comprehension, of course, is a very important thing that you have to develop. And the contentment. So whatever you have, so having some amount of contentment is necessary, otherwise mind get consistently, say, frustrated, agitated. So maintaining, therefore, a kind of contented mind is very useful. So these are very much like preparations of the background for the some delicate process in the future. So Buddha mentioned this as the restraint of the morality. So that as the morality sikha or the morality training. Now after mentioning that, so we last time discussed, so pancha nivarane pahine. Now one is developing mindfulness, one is developing concentration, and one is basically practicing meditation. So there are different hindrances are there covering the mind. So basically sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and the doubt. So these are the main hindrances. And Buddha mentioned one has to subside these hindrances. So in order to do that, we are developing five concentration factors or jhana factors. Vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata. Applied mind, sustained mind, then the rapture, happiness, and the concentration, one-pointedness. Now these factors, when we are developing, they are actually counteracting with the hindrances. I think I discussed last time how they are, each one is handling a particular hindrance. Say for example, the concentration handles the sensual desire. So when mind is concentrated, sensual desire is not there. And then say for example, ill will is handled by the rapture available in the mind. When one's mind is somewhat happy, rapturous, then it's such mind can't have ill will. So ill will is not there. So likewise, these concentration factors, what we are purposely developing, enhancing, are counteracting with the hindrances. Now we can say, okay, the mind is free from hindrances. Now Buddha mentioned Pamuccan Jayati. So when hindrances are not there, one maintains or one experiences some amount of happiness. Pamudidasa Piti Jayati. So when such happiness is available, so we can see some kind of rapture is there, because now you are done with most of the heavy part of the hindrances. Sensual desire is not there, ill will is not there, mind is getting somewhat concentrated. So some kind of a satisfaction, spiritual satisfaction, spiritual happiness, niramisa piti is arousing. So as a result of that, you are having some kind of a piti in the mind. Now, piti manasa kayo passambati. So then Buddha mentioned the when mind is happy, so that body also become tranquil. So because mind is happy, mind is quiet, mind is happy, satisfied, so the body also not agitated now. Instead, body become calm, quiet, tranquil. Pasadda kayo sukhang vedeti. Now, not only from the mind, even through the body, you feel happiness. Sukhino chittan samadhyati. So when body is comfortable, when body is happy, when the mind is calm, when the mind is tranquil, that means the mind is concentrated. Now, this is very much like a beautiful cause and effect relationship. And you can understand, so these background conditions are necessary for the mind to properly concentrate. You can't simply strive to concentrate the mind unless you are preparing the conditions. So it is necessary to prepare the conditions, like having a contented mind, maintaining fair amount of sense restraint, and maintaining fair amount of good sila, and feeling contented, feeling happy, feeling rapturous, and as a result, body become tranquil, comfortable, happy, and then the mind is concentrated. So these conditions, when they are available, it is quite natural to mind to become concentrated. Because mind is getting distracted because it is searching happiness outside. But when internally you are having happiness, internally where there is some kind of a comfort, then mind doesn't want to wander, rather it is getting stay at home. Stay at home. So basically it doesn't need to distract. So that is where the mind gets concentrated. Now Buddha start to explain the very question of venerable of Pottapada, that how when one attains first jhana, that he is eliminating certain amount of perceptions, and some beneficial perceptions are arising due to this training. Now perception of lust, and actually not only lust, hatred, delusion, so basically some amount of hindrances are being subsided when one enters first jhana. So you know vitakka vich, that's a phrase mentioning how one attains first jhana. So in order to attain first jhana, you got to subside all five hindrances. So whatever the perceptions pertaining to five hindrances are therefore subsided. So you can see when one attains first jhana, that indicates one has already eliminated or subsided five hindrances. So basically one main hindrance is, we are here, it is mentioned as perception of lust, but not only perception of lust, but perceptions of ill will, perception of doubt, perceptions of worries, restlessness, srotha and torpor, all such perceptions are subsided because of the training, and then a new perception has arisen. So that is the perception available in the first jhana. It is mentioned subtle perception of delight and happiness born of detachment. Now one has relinquished the typical mundane kind of perceptions and developed in the spirituality, and one's mind is now maintained in the first jhana, and one have that kind of a happiness, kind of a delight, because the five hindrances are eliminated, five hindrances are abandoned. So though now you have a kind of a detachment towards those five hindrances. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so that is the new perception available in the mind. All the gross harmful perceptions are temporarily subsided because of training, and now a new useful perception is available in the mind. So therefore the statement that Buddha mentioned, some perceptions arise through training and some pass away through training. So this is the kind of the solid answer Buddha is giving to Pottapada, that in order for certain perceptions to eliminate, abandon, you got to train. And again, in order for useful, beneficial perceptions to arise, you got to train. So through the training, one is having the beneficial perceptions, and through the training, one can abandon the harmful perceptions. Now Buddha explaining the one achievement that is available in the first jhana. So you have eliminated, subsided all perceptions related to the five hindrances, and now you are having a perception related to the first jhana. And now Buddha doesn't stop there. He explained that you may reach the second jhana. One may understand some kind of perception is available in the first jhana, still it is somewhat gross. So there are certain disadvantages in this present perception. Now what he does is, he is eliminating two jhana factors, vitakka and vichara, that is applied mind and the sustained mind. Now he is trying to further concentrate the mind. You know, now when vitakka vichara is available, again and again your mind has to apply to the particular object. Now say if you are using anapanasati, so you are trying to absorb to first jhana using anapanasati, then there may be a concentration sign. Again and again you are applying your mind to that concentration sign. So you have to continuously do that. So this subtle applying or application of mind towards the sign is a kind of a movement in the mind. It is somewhat closer to a hindrance. It is having kind of a jerk in the mind. So therefore one may understand, how about removing this perception? How about removing this kind of a jerk in the mind and completely absorb to the object without any kind of wavering? How about having a very stable concentration? So that is what happened in the second jhana. So one eliminates vitakka and vichara, applied mind and the sustained mind, and now mind is very much fixed with the object. So therefore the concentration is very high, very strong. So therefore Buddha mentioned in the second jhana, subtle perception of delight and happiness born of concentration. Now the mind is further concentrated, as a result there is a subtle happiness and delight. Previously you experience happiness and delight because of the abandoning of hindrances. Still, the concentration is not that powerful. But when one reaches the second jhana, concentration is more powerful. As a result, you are having kind of a subtle happiness, delight. That is because of the higher concentration. Now, that kind of a perception is available in second jhana. Now, the previous perception pertaining to the first jhana is abandoned. You can see because of training, one now has abandoned the perception related to the first jhana, and one was able to abide by the perceptions pertaining to the second jhana. Now Buddha comes to the third jhana. So in order for attain third jhana, one even has to abandon the rapture. Now in the second jhana, rapture is fairly predominant. So one may experience fair amount of rapturous experience. Maybe goosebumps coming in, maybe waves type of pleasurable feelings coming in. You might feel like floating. So very blissful, rapturous experiences may be available in the second jhana. So those are the perceptions available in the second jhana. And one may understand, okay, those perceptions are still rough, gross. Now actually, in order to come to that understanding, one may have to maintain that sort of a jhana for a long time, and then mind become more and more refined, mindful. As a result of that, one may understand, okay, I better further refine the perception, further eliminate whatever the gross perceptions, and better refine the existing perception. So this is the kind of a attitude he may maintain in his mind. As a result, he is abandoning the more gross, rapturous experience, and he is now more into contented happiness. That is what available in the third jhana. So it's a kind of a equanimous, contented happiness available in the third jhana when one abandoned the more gross kind of rapturous experience. So therefore, you can see when one reaches the third jhana, so he has abandoned the perceptions, more gross perceptions available in the second jhana. Now he is experiencing more subtle perception available in the third jhana. So that is more equanimous, and more than that, he is feeling contented and happy. And after that, he may reach us even the fourth jhana. Because after maintaining the third jhana, he probably may understand, okay, still some amount of happiness is there. Still it is somewhat gross. How about having a more subtle equanimity? Equanimity is more refined when compared with the happiness. So his mind is now more biased towards the equanimity, and so he is eliminating happiness. Now his mind become more and more equanimous. So the perception related to the equanimity in the fourth jhana is now available. The perceptions pertaining to the third jhana is now abandoned. Now one reaches the fourth jhana. Now all these basically have some sort of relationship to materiality. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, and fourth jhana, all these jhanas are material jhana, so rupa jhana. It has some kind of perceptions related to the materiality. So for example, if you are practicing anapanasati, so you may have kind of perception related to the body, maybe related to the breath, or the concentration sign which has some relationship with the body or the breath. So likewise, even when one is in the material jhana, so you are with some perception to the body. Now, or some perception to the matter, to the rupa. Now, when one reaches the arupa jhana, so all sorts of material perceptions, all sorts of rupa are to be abandoned. So all such perceptions are to be abandoned when one reaches the arupa jhana. So removing all perceptions of matter. And any kind of resistance, patigha, which is available because of the matter, that also has to be eliminated. So mind has to become fairly expanded. Now, whenever your mind is absorbed to a particular, say first jhana, or second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, so mind is somewhat restricted because some kind of a resistance is there because of this restriction. Your mind is confined to a particular object. So to that particular object, your mind is absorbed. And there's a kind of a resistance there. So that resistance also has to be eliminated. As a result, your mind becomes more and more expanded, more and more free. Basically become boundless. Now this resistance, because of this limited absorption in the Rupa Jhana, are to be abandoned. Now the mind has to become expanded, boundless. And again, another point mentioned, non-attraction to the perception of diversity. So basically, when one reaches first jhana, second jhana, so there are many methods available. And so there could be certain kind of a taste. Say for example, when one reaches first jhana using metta, loving kindness, it has a particular taste. Assume that one reaches first jhana using anapanasati, it has another taste. Assume one reaches first jhana using, say, even asubha, one can reach as first jhana. It has a different, completely different taste. But one is in the first jhana. So there is a kind of a diversity in that sense. But that diversity perception also has to be eliminated when one reaches the arupa jhana. So therefore, Buddha mentioned, when one reaches the arupa jhana, first one is the akasananchayatana, sphere of infinite space, all those matter-related perceptions are to be abandoned. All the restrictions pertaining to the very limited object also has to be abandoned, so the mind become more expanded, boundless. And again, the diversity also has to be abandoned. Now mind become just the space. Akasam anantam. So basically one's perception is that the space is unlimited, space is boundless, infinite. So that is the only perception one may have. It doesn't have any other taste. So you don't have any different methods to, I mean, you may use kasina to attain the arupa jhana. Different kasinas also can be used. But very much when the mind become more expanded, it may have the same taste, irrespective of the kasina. That is the equanimity. So all the four kinds of arupa jhanas are having equanimity, and they are boundless, limitless, expanded. And in the first one, that is the akasananchayatana, sphere of infinite space, one has the perception of infinite space. So mind is very open, the mind has expanded, and one is having kind of a expanded experience about this space, because space is everywhere, space is in the whole universe. So mind is now perceiving that very universal, expanded, boundless space, and that is the perception one is having. Now, when one reaches the other one, that is the consciousness, infinite consciousness, vijnananchayatana, there one has to eliminate the perception of space, boundless space. Instead, one has to have perception of boundless consciousness. So these are, in a way, the training that one may go through in the arupa jhana. So when one is attained to the akasananchayatana, infinite space, so one's mind is fairly filled with that feeling of perception, feeling of the boundless space, infinite space. So that perception is there. Now, when one is arguing, telling that, okay, now there's a consciousness which is also infinite, that is the one become conscious about this infinite space. Now you are getting more attention towards this infinite consciousness instead of infinite space. That is how one eliminates the perception of infinite space, and one is attaining to the perception of infinite consciousness. Because consciousness is the one perceiving, become conscious about the infinite space. So for the infinite space to be conscious, one has to have an infinite consciousness. So now you are arguing in that line, and now you are trying to be aware of that infinite consciousness. So therefore you have a perception of infinite consciousness when one reaches Vijnana Chayatana. And later, now what one would do is just eliminate the akasa, the space, and it becomes very much empty. There is nothing there. So there is basically nothing there to perceive. So you are training the mind to become perceive kind of a nothingness. Basically nothing is there because infinite space is now removed. Your attention is drawn to another direction, so that the perception of the space is also not there. So basically nothing is there. So the nothingness, perception of nothingness. Now you can recognize here in this process, very subtle perceptions are the ones more and more now the yogi is experiencing. When one is in the first jhana, it is very much gross. Second jhana, comparatively refined. Third jhana, further refined. Fourth jhana, further refined. And when one jumps to the arupa jhana, it's a huge difference is there in the perception. And now one is in the infinite space, and the kind of a very subtle perception is there. When it comes to Vijnana Chayatana, even subtle, and the nothingness, very much the subtle. Now here, Buddha stopped at this level, nothingness, Akinchanyayatana. So there, he basically stopped there and he mentioned, one has reached Sanyagga. Sanyagga means kind of the crest of the perception. So it's a kind of a very subtle perception. One of the subtlest perception is available in the nothingness, Akinchanyayatana. So Buddha mentioned, okay, he is now there. Now very interesting point is there in this level. So that is one of the very important part mentioned in the Pottapada Sutta. Now yogi is reflecting his whole process, this whole activity, what he was practicing. So what he was doing is whenever there is kind of a gross perception, he's trying something refined, he's training himself. As a result of that, more and more intentional work is done. So when that is satisfied, his gross perception is eliminated, he enters to a subtle perception. And now he trains there. And now he feels that subtle perception is now gross, because his mind is now more refined. Now he feels gross perception there. Now he further sort of doing something to further refine that gross perception. So he has an intention to refine that gross perception. So intention is there. So intentionally he is trying to refine. He is doing something. So as a result of that, he was able to abandon the gross perception and he was able to enter another refined perception. Now this is a kind of a doing process. So the yogi has to do something. Yogi has to intentionally do something. So now he is fed up of doing this. Now very interesting actually, if you consider from the practical point of view, how a yogi is involved in this whole process. So more and more the mind becomes refined, so he may understand the gross activity in the mind. So in order to attain more refined perception, he has to abandon a gross perception. It doesn't automatically happen. One has to intentionally do something. So that doing part is kind of an activity in the mind. So therefore, he feels that this intentional activity in the mind is somewhat mean, somewhat below, somewhat unnecessary. Why should I do this kind of a process? Chete manasame papyo, achete manasame seyo. Now he feels, how about not making any intention? How about maintaining the mind as it is? How to stop making intentions? How to stop doing? So this is a very interesting reflection one may have. So as you are refining and refining your perceptions, at a given moment, this reflection would really make a turning point into the practice. You stop refining, instead you stop, and again you stop intentional works, intentional doing at all. Completely you stop yourself. Nacheva cheteti nacha abhisankaroti. So he now doesn't want to think, doesn't want to make any intention, doesn't want to make any kind of construction. So now you can see a huge turning point of one's spirituality happens here, because so far he was continuously refining his perceptions through the training. In order to do that, he's intentionally doing something, intentionally training himself. And he do some subtle constructions. Now altogether he stop it here. He doesn't want to make any further intention, doesn't want to think at all, doesn't want to construct anymore. As a result of that, what happened? So the mind cease. Cease in the sense, all the perceptions cease. Whatever the perceptions available in the mind, gross perceptions are ceased, and there is no new perception. Because previously you can see, when one reaches the second jhana, a new perception is arisen. First jhana perception is abandoned. When one reaches the third jhana, a perceptions pertaining to the third jhana is available. Perceptions pertaining to the second jhana is abandoned. So always a new perception is arising. But here, when one reaches the cessation, there is no such kind of a new perception. Rather, one's mind is not attached to anything. One's mind has left the footing. One's mind does not show any sign. So the mind becomes more spacious without a perception, without an object. Tacheva sanya nirujjanti, anyache olarika sanya na uppajjanti. So the whatever the perceptions the mind already had, so that is being abandoned. But a new gross kind of gross kind of any other perception is not going to arise. As a result of that, the cessation is experienced. So at this point, Buddha asks a question from Pottapada. Now this is the gradual achievement of refined perceptions. And cessation of perception is brought about by successive steps. So kind of a very long Pali word is mentioned, anubhubhabi sanya nirodha sampajana samapatti. So you are doing kind of a gradual conscious attainment to refine conscious, refine perceptions. Now this is what Buddha mentioned. And after mentioning that, Buddha asked from Pottapada, have you ever heard of this kind of explanation from those people who were at that gathering? And then Pottapada say, no, I haven't had that kind of they didn't have this kind of an explanation. They were telling this and that. But this is a very comprehensive explanation and emphasizing the gradual training. It is happening step by step. And very interesting question made by Pottapada here, and he has noted that Buddha mentioning about sanyag. kind of a crux of the perception. Here, Buddha at this place particularly mentioned about the nothingness, akinchanyayatana, as the sanyagga, as the crux of perception. And Pottapada very cleverly asked, is it just the one sanyagga, one crux of perception is available, or are there many? And Buddha also make a very interesting answer. Buddha mentioned, yatha yatha ko pottapada nirodhang pusati, tatha tathanang sanyanggam panyapemi. Whatever the way that you are able to experience the cessation, nirodha, so that ways all I can say as sanyagga, all I can say as the crux of perceptions. So that means, assume that you are in the first jhana. Suppose that you are in first jhana and you stop coming to all these other things. Second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, akasananchayatana, akinchanyayatana, all that stuff you don't want. Instead, you want to directly touch the cessation. Then what are you going to do? So basically, you have to recognize, okay, no need to go to the other things. Let me stop constructions altogether. Let me stop all the preparations. Let me stop all intentional work. Let me calm down. Let my mind tranquil, become tranquil. Let my mind become objectless. Let all the attachments abandon. So that kind of a radical determination one can take even in the first jhana. If so, one can touch the cessation directly from there. Suppose you have reached the second jhana. You were in first jhana, but now you did more intentional work, did some refinement, and you were able to reach the second jhana. Suppose you got that determination while at the second jhana. I don't want to go further. I don't want to go to third, fourth, etc. Let me touch the cessation here by not doing anything. By not doing anything. By not making any further perceptions. By not making any further intentions. Because intentions are gross. Let me stop all the intentions. Let me calm down. Let me tranquil. As a result of that, while being in the second jhana, now you are coming directly to the cessation and you are abandoning the perception of the second jhana. Now you are in the cessation, in the nirodha. Likewise, one can do in the third jhana. One can do it in the fourth jhana. One can do it while in the infinite space. One can do it while in the infinite consciousness. And as Buddha mentioned, in this particular case, one can do it while in the nothingness as well. So you can see all these things, therefore, can be considered as sanyagga, the crux of perception, given that you are using that as a foundation to touch the cessation. Now, this is very interesting from the vipassana point of view. So that means to which level that you turn your practice to vipassana. So far, you are coming very much into samatha practice. And while in that samatha experience, you are sort of doing kind of a radical reflection, vipassana, so that you abandon the samatha experience and you are touching the cessation. So it is very much like sabada puppangama vipassana. So you are achieving very refined concentration. And now you see the drawbacks in that concentration process and the continuation of the concentration practice, and you stop that altogether. And you even stop making any intention, any constructions, any sankhara. As a result of that, mind basically touches the cessation, nirodha. Now, this is what Buddha has mentioned pertaining to the gradual eradication of various perceptions. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session, because it's a very interesting area that Buddha has highlighted in this. And now I like to open the session for questions.
So if we have any new friends joining us for the first time, you may participate in the Q&A by raising your hand. or you can also send me via chat. So, Bhante, is there a benefit or purpose of attaining the higher level of jhanas beyond the fourth jhana besides for the purposes of, you know, attaining the supernatural powers?
Yeah, actually, we can say so. Basically, I mean, very much like during the Buddha's time, there is a huge emphasis on jhana. And as you said, they may be interested of attaining some supernatural powers, psychic powers, and even Devadatta had psychic powers. Actually, in order to have psychic powers, one has to develop jhana. And not only the kind of a mild level development, but rather one has to master jhana in order to have psychic powers. But on the other hand, when we consider the achievement of cessation, or the touching of cessation, experience of cessation, and that one can do not only through jhana but even through the vipassana practice. Now actually, while, say for example, while at first jhana, one needs to reflect the disadvantages of first jhana and the whole process of concentration practice. And one has to stop the all formations, the sankhara. That is how one is touching the cessation. Now that is the complete vipassana. So that one can do at many different levels. So basically, I mean, it is very much like people's different attitudes, that one sometimes want to have a fair amount of samatha practice, then only they want to change into or turn into vipassana. And sometimes they are going very far, even to the arupa jhana level, and then turn into vipassana. So therefore, it's depending on the interests of the person, and there is no any kind of a strong reason that one needs to go through all the jhanas. Rather, it's very much like one's potential maybe, and one's interest to explore all the different concentration practices and have some idea about them, and then maybe reaching the nirodha and just calming down the mind there. So on the other hand, one advantage we can see is that so when one has fair amount of experience in all these different jhana, so it is, and your experience is fairly broad, and therefore you can easily recognize the difference between the vipassana experience, the cessation experience, and the typically being in another jhana. Other than that, when one has some limited experience, probably one can have a wrong understanding that even while in first jhana, he probably might think that he has attained Maggapala. So those are kind of wrong estimations or overestimations. So those kinds of wrong perceptions can happen if one is somewhat ignorant. But on the other hand, if one is dedicating one's life for a long time in the concentration practice and very much training oneself in different concentration practices, and know clearly what are the differences, and if one now able to attain the cessation and later maybe attain path fruition, probably one can differentiate. So that experience with the typical absorption in the jhana. So likewise, there may be advantages, but on the other hand, and a fair amount of time, fair amount of your energy has to be invested on this whole practice. So therefore, it's very unlikely that a layperson could do the whole thing, because he has to fully dedicate his life towards the concentration practice. Because even though with short time we have explained these things, these are very much kind of a lifetime practices. And you can't immediately attain from first jhana to second jhana. You have to fairly be in the first jhana for a long time. Then only your mind become ready to get on to the second jhana. So similar to the third jhana, similar to the fourth jhana. So likewise, these are fairly practically difficult in some sense. So therefore, I mean, there are advantages and there are disadvantages as well.
Thank you, Dante, for the thorough explanation. Are we going to invite Joseph to ask the next question?
Thank you. Hello, Dante.
Yes.
My question is, you were talking about in the first jhana the concentration sign, and I just want to clarify what that is, because I'm thinking when you say concentration sign, for example, if I'm doing Anapanasati, is the concentration sign like the feeling of the warmth of the breath or the shortness of the breath? Is that what you mean by concentration sign?
No, actually, when it comes to samatha practice, it is little different. Now, actually, when we are feeling instantaneously about the warmth of the breath and the coolness of the breath or the touching place of the breath, so that is very much like the instantaneous kind of concentration. But when you are talking about the jhana, samatha jhana, so you are talking kind of a stable sign. So that is what we sometimes call as anapanasati nimitta or concentration sign. So that is actually a result of concentration practice. Now, some of you may have experience. So as you are developing samatha practice, even anapanasati, so there's a sometimes kind of a light appear in front of your eyes. So your eyes are fairly closed, but kind of a light probably can appear. So sometimes it appear in different colors, and as you are continuing your practice, so that sign become more and more brighter and more white color mostly. So that basically is very much the sign become stable, and that actually can be used in order to attain higher concentrations or the absorptions. So that is what I was referring as the concentration sign. It is not just the breath.
It is something that would...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Please go ahead.
So, sorry. So it would be something that would sort of appear in the mind.
Yes.
And then the breath, like the mind would no longer be perceiving the breath.
Yes.
Would be perceiving the sign.
Exactly. So basically the breath is the one causing to generate fair amount of concentration, and the result is this concentration sign. And once this concentration sign becomes stable, you got to abandon the breath. Now you have to make use of the sign in order to further refine your attention, further stabilize your attention, and further absorb to this particular sign. So there's a kind of a shift between the primary object.
And is this something which is discouraged in the Vipassana?
Very much like, because yeah. Now here actually we are restricting the mind to a particular object. Because you know, in the absorption, that means you are very much attached to a particular object strongly. So mind has become that, basically. So you are again and again applying the mind to this concentration sign. And as a result of that, mind get really hooked up. Strongly attached to that particular object. So now mind is not wavering. Mind is not jumping to here and there. So that is why it is concentrated. It is concentrated by strongly attaching, strongly absorbing to a particular refined object. So from the Vipassana point of view, therefore we can say, it is not necessary. The point of Vipassana is that you are using very direct experience like breath or elements or feelings or with different kinds of minds. So there you are trying to understand their disadvantages, their impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature. As a result of that, mind become not interested of being with them. Mind doesn't want to be with them. Mind wants to abandon them altogether. And now mind become objectless because it doesn't want anything. It doesn't want any footing. So therefore The vipassana is taking an entirely different approach, from the samatha point of view. Because in vipassana, you understand the repercussions, the disadvantages, consequences of all the conditioned phenomena, and you don't want to be with the conditioned phenomena altogether. So you abandon everything. So there is no footing for the mind to stay. It becomes very much unestablished. No footing. So that is the kind of concentration that we are talking in the vipassana practice.
Yeah, because I think it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago,
yeah,
when we were talking about the kasina practice, and you sort of explained, you know, that you look at a color and get really absorbed, mm-hmm, say, by the color.
Yes.
And I experimented with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I found, for example, I imagined, at first I sat, and I find that I can, you know, almost immediately when I sit, I get into a pretty relaxed state, and I imagined red, and fairly quickly I felt that I was really absorbed,
right,
in this red, and it was a very, very, like I felt very deeply absorbed,
mm,
into it,
mm-hmm,
and it felt like I really just sort of lost, like, I mean, I felt it felt really good, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I remembered that the training was to not stay there, but to come out.
Yeah.
And my feeling was, when I came out, it was like, wow, I could have just like gotten lost.
Yeah.
There,
kind of. Yeah.
That's the kind of, I mean, I've also, I remember I read,
yeah,
I think it was the Seven Contemplations of Insight,
mm-hmm,
Venerable Yanarama, saying how it can be very dangerous for novices to, mm, practice this,
mm-hmm,
because the training is you go in, but then you have to come out right away. Like, you go in, but you come out. And the danger for the novice is they don't come out.
Mm-hmm.
They go in and they get sucked into it.
Mm-hmm.
So is this, I mean, that is that, that's the concentration sign? Is that what,
yeah,
we're kind of talking,
yes,
about?
Yes, yes. In the kasina practice, okay, actually in the kasina practice, you are using the perception of that particular kasina as the concentration sign. So in the anapanasati, what I have explained is the kind of a light we are using which is coming as a result of the concentration. So that is that as the concentration sign. But in the kasina practice, you are using that particular color or the quality. If you are using, say for example, patavi kasina, so you are using the perception of the hardness, that patavi, the kind of gross hardness perception is used as a kasina, and that is the primary object that becomes your concentration sign, to which that you are going to absorb. So basically, as you have mentioned, so you have to be very careful in practicing kasina, because they are fairly opening the mind, expanding the mind, and so those are very powerful, and one has to do that gradually. And if you are doing it too much, probably you end up with not having sleep and sleeping disorders, and mind is sometimes hyperactive. So those kinds of repercussions can happen. So therefore, one has to be careful in practicing kasina.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
This is a really good lecture tonight. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Pini Bhumi to the next question.
Thank you very much. I have a couple of questions regarding the meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I first learned meditation. What is that noise?
Oh, that is actually the cicadas.
Sorry. I thought it was coming from my iPhone.
No, it is from my side. So, and these days, actually, they are making the noise in the morning.
Yeah. I started my practice with the Goenka tradition, and I used to go frequently, and I got it, by practicing that, I got this some almost like a jhana.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it's possible. The way you're saying jhanas are not possible. I did experience something quite similar to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite confused.
No, actually, while in Goenka practice, say you are doing some scanning, right? Body scanning. So while you are engaged in that, you feel kind of absorption?
I really did. And I even saw cessation and Vanga Jnana also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why. I mean, basically, so this sutta actually explained more towards the samatha-oriented practice. So after practicing samatha, how one may experience cessation. But there are other suttas explaining how one uses vipassana to experience cessation. So Goenka practice is more towards the vipassana. So, I mean, of course, I mean, it can happen. So while you are seeing the consequences of various conditioned phenomena, so one's mind may abandon that, completely stop making any new intentions, completely stop doing any formations, and then touch the cessation. So it can happen. So that is the vipassana practice. So that is the in a way the strength of vipassana practice.
Bhakti and I had an experience like I have never in my life experienced such joy.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that is jhana. So now you're saying practicing vipassana, you don't come into jhana. I'm a little confused, Bhakti.
No, actually, now probably you can remember. So let me see, I can show that to you. Probably you can remember that while I was explaining to you about the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. So in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, probably you can remember I was explaining equanimity based on unity. So let me show that this thing. Can you remember this chart I was showing? The Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. So Buddha is explaining that you have to eliminate the household type of different joy, grief, equanimity. Instead, you got to develop the meditation-related joy, grief, equanimity. And then say you are coming to the abandoning the joy and you are coming with equanimity. And equanimity is twofold. That is equanimity based on diversity and equanimity based on unity. So at this level, equanimity based on unity is parallel with this arupa jhana.
Okay.
So equanimity based on unity means basically very much the same type of experience with arupa jhana. But you came through kind of a vipassana practice. So you can see it's very much kind of a coincidence here. So, I mean, some sort of a perception you had in the samatha practice in the domain of samatha practice at the arupa jhana, you can have some similar experience in the vipassana practice as well. So equanimity based on unity, Buddha explained with akasananchayatana, vinyananchayatana, akinchanyayatana and nevasanyanasanyayatana. So this is the level that you can see you are coming deeply to a very high concentration even in the vipassana practice. And it is boundless, and it is boundless because, you know, in the previous samatha practices, say first jhana, second jhana, your mind is limited. Your mind is absorbed to a particular object. But in the vipassana practice, there is no such object at all. So mind becomes completely expanded, boundless.
Oh, I see.
So that is why one can say your that level of experience is very much similar to a boundless arupa jhana.
Bhante, one other question is, I have been listening to English Dhamma talks on YouTube by Bhante. Australian monk
Ajahn Brahmali.
Ajahn Brahmali and Ajahn Brahm and Ajahn Sona. They are all quoting this Eightfold Path and saying that concentration is equal to jhanas and the vipassana practice is something that has come later and you cannot gain enlightenment without going through jhana.
Yes, yes.
So can you explain that to me, Bhante, please?
Yeah, actually, let me, rather than sort of having kind of a critique, I like to take a particular sutta and explain. So we'll take another sutta later where Buddha explains certain approaches, many different approaches. Actually, using samatha to attain, samatha and then doing vipassana. So those are mentioned in different suttas, and it is not just one method that Buddha mentioned. There are many methods Buddha mentioned. So it is. So let's explore various suttas and try to understand many different approaches that Buddha has mentioned. Then things would be more easy to understand. Rather than I don't like to critique their views. So let's explore Buddha's words, then we can have a kind of an independent idea.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
But I just want to have you clarify to me that I am not imagining this the state I got into that I have never in my life experienced.
Yeah. No, thing is, even in the vipassana practice, the experience that you are having at the concentration level is very powerful. So, say for example, animitta samadhi, appanihita samadhi, sunyata samadhi, what we call as the signless concentration, the desireless concentration, and again the emptiness concentration. Those are very, very powerful and very close, even more powerful than the arupa jhana. And they are very much in parallel with arupa jhana. Because they are also boundless, and so therefore very powerful. So therefore, those powerful vipassana jhanas or vipassana concentrations, you may feel quite joyful. You may feel, even after coming out of it, you may feel really, really pleased, really satisfied, really contented, really calm, tranquil, even after the emergence of the vipassana practice.
Actually, that feeling was there for about 2 weeks, and I almost saw a light above my head. It was there. I look. It's not there, but in my mind, I can see. Like that.
Okay. Yeah, it can happen. Definitely.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, okay. Farewell, Sanai.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Lupendra for the next question.
Hello, Sanai Bhante.
Yes.
Bhante, now when we try to concentrate, suddenly when our mind goes to that in between state and awake state, in between that state, is it directly going to some sort of dhyana?
No. The thing is, sometimes when the mind is little drowsy and still want to concentrate, so it can come to a kind of an intermediate state. So, in the present scientific point of view, so your mundane active kind of mind, where it is getting distracted constantly, it is in one level. And when you are in another, say completely deep sleep, it is another level. But the In between is another area that one may explore in the vipassana and jhana. So very much like in these two extremes. So you are not in the very distracted, scattered kind of active mind, and you are not in the deep sleep, but in between. So you need to see whether what level of mindfulness is available in this level. So if the mindfulness is less weak, then it is very much like closer to drowsiness. But if the mind is fairly awake, fairly mindful, then you can still, the mind is concentrated but quite awake. So probably you can improve your mindfulness using walking meditation, refine your mindfulness further, and then probably you can have a fairly pure level of experience in the concentration.
Bhante, when that thing happened. Mm. Now, when I was doing a walking meditation, I got this feeling, and usually when earlier days, there is some kind of darkness going around, and I feel like I'm going above my body, higher and higher, mm-hmm. kind of getting more relaxed.
Yeah.
And this time I got this sort of feeling, and then what happened? Then there was some. I felt that I'm getting in between that state, and then there was kind of a. I think a kind of a power cut. So all the lights were gone.
Mm.
But still, when I was in this state, I still was kind of in a very kind of a conscious situation where even the. Kind of that starlight. When I just came out of it, I still see the starlight and everything happening.
Yeah, that is what actually, even today, Upendra, that is what we discuss as the concentration sign. So when you are doing Anapanasati practice, most of the time, this concentration sign can happen. So it may sometimes appear like a moon, sometimes appear like a star or sun or torch, something like that. So some days it may be bright, some days not that bright. So likewise, it can vary. So even at the end of the session, probably it can be available. It depends on the concentration that you are having, and it can be available. But I mean, the point is, work more towards the mindfulness and wisdom part, because now the concentration is fairly high. So I mean, because sometimes what happens is the concentration overwhelms. Rather than, leaving mindfulness and wisdom behind. So that is not good. So we need to balance the faculties, particularly the mindfulness, concentration and wisdom. Those three faculties have to be balanced. What happens sometimes is that at the beginning we are, strongly practicing mindfulness. As a result of that, the concentration develops. And when concentration builds up, we forget the mindfulness, and ultimately concentration start to lead the whole process. It become more predominant. Then mindfulness become less, wisdom also less, but concentration is very high. So this is a kind of an imbalance happening in the practice. So there we need to be careful. At that level, we need to basically stop more doing the sitting practice. Rather, we better involve long in the walking practice, so that the mindfulness is further developed.
But when I am doing the walking meditation at this stage, when I want to break it, I try to go away from my body and observe. Is it okay or?
That's all right, but do it in a more relaxed manner. Say, allow the body to walk in a more relaxed, restful nature, and you are kind of passively observing the body. More relaxed. That relaxed nature should be available in the mind, rather than you are strenuously experiencing. Now, say for example, when the concentration is more powerful, you can strictly observe the whole process, more concentrated manner. On the other hand, when the mindfulness is more powerful, so you can observe the same process in a more relaxed manner. So you need to have a kind of a blend of these two.
Yes, but then when I come to do the sitting meditation, at a stage, you know, when I just observe my body from outside, I see that when with the in-breath and out-breath, body is bending. And after that, when I wanted to, you know, come into a straight posture to kind of make my spine kind of straight, at that point, I felt like only there's kind of a little bit of a spiral cord and the rest of the body is kind of missing. And that whole area is kind of... actually, there's nothing in it, but like it's so fragile and it's kind of empty. But I feel like something is there, but still I can't see anything. You know, it's kind of completely empty, likewise.
Yeah.
And this thing happened for about like a cycle. Again, I feel the in-breath and out-breath, and again body is bending, and again when I come into a kind of sit straight, then I again feel this emptiness, and it's slowly, then I feel the left side, then I see still right side, it's missing, and then I come into the normal, my concentration comes into the whole body. So likewise, so at this stage, Bhante, what am I supposed to do usually?
Yeah, so basically when when your mind is fairly concentrated onto a particular body part or any kind of another dynamic process, so let that become most prominent, and you don't need to worry about any other thing. So you simply have to carefully observe whatever is prominent, and you don't need to even name it. You don't need to have any label even. I mean, you don't need to find out where exactly it is, but something is there. And you don't know where exactly, what's the location, what's the name, label. So that's all you can't perceive, doesn't matter. You don't need to even, and you simply know the behavior of that. There is some kind of a dynamic process there, and you are carefully observing the behavior. They are changing, they are arising, they are passing away. So that whole behavior is what you are giving more emphasis.
Right. Okay, Bhante. Right. Yeah. Thank you very much for today's great discussion.
Okay. Teruvan Sannai.
I think that's the last question,
Sunday. Okay, then we have spent a fair amount of time today discussing. I think Joseph doesn't have another question, do he? Joseph, you need to ask another question? Yeah, right.
Sorry, I just forgot to lower my hands.
Fine.
Thank you.
Okay, then we'll wind up today's session. We'll share the merits with all the past relatives, all the celestial beings, and whoever in need of merits. And also we will wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha cha bhummattha deva naga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirangakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha cha bhummattha deva naga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.